Today is Friday, February 25th, 2022. This is part three of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Jannie Turner. Jannie's name is spelled J-A-N-N-I-E. Turner is T-U-R-N-E-R. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Jannie. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Great. Jannie, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone? Thank you. Can you tell me about your first recollections of visiting the Grand Canyon, when that was, and what do you remember?
Well, I remember, and my brother had reminded me also that Elmer Purdyman used to show videos of the Grand Canyon, of some of his river trips.
Wow.
At that hotel that he owned just outside of Sedona.
Okay.
That's where I mentioned that we went to see the Ma and Pa Kettle films and stuff.
Yeah.
But Chuck reminded me that we also, that's where we first saw our first videos of the river trip. And he at the time thought that that was absolutely the greatest job in the world to get paid to do that, you know. So, but he talked to us about one of his guides dying on the trip, and so we all grew up knowing that that was kind of a dangerous journey because Elmer said somebody died down there.
Yeah.
So, but a lot of
and that I'm going to
Sedona.
I'm going to jump in. I think that would have been Gil Hansen.
Oh, okay.
Does that ring a bell?
The name doesn't ring a bell with me, but
okay.
I might have just heard it in the.
And that was in Glen Canyon. I could be wrong on the name. But these would have been maybe 16-millimeter films that he was showing?
Yeah, they were that's probably what they were. That's what we had, too, on our camera.
Yeah. I wonder where those went. Where did those films go? Gosh.
Maybe in the Purdyman stuff. They could even maybe be at that. Maybe at the museum in Sedona. A lot of people donate stuff that they think is historically interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's a thought. Okay. So
as far as myself going,
yeah.
I was in 4-H because we didn't have a lot of stuff in Sedona, but we had an active 4-H club.
Okay.
And so we went up there as a group one time. And I don't think we went all the way to the bottom. We just went partway down on the south rim.
Okay.
And
how old would you have been?
10, maybe 12.
Okay.
12, I don't know. So, but I know my brother went many times. He went with the Boy Scouts several times. That was just one of the things they did every single year, you know, how they always have like a camping trip.
Yeah.
Every year. Well, they did theirs in the Grand Canyon.
Okay.
And we had an active group of Sedona boys, every one of them, of which I knew.
Okay.
But they all went. But he and two of his friends, Walter Wilson, who was not related to us.
All right.
Actually, he was adopted from a orphanage in Germany at the end of World War II.
Oh, wow.
They had all these, you know, half-American kids in the orphanage.
Yeah.
And his parents didn't travel, but they needed to go get him. So my mother actually is the one that flew to Germany and got Walter out of the orphanage.
Wow.
And got him home to his parents. And his dad was Jack Wilson, that I've told you, owned a lot of the houses over there by Wheeler Park and those places, and rented them out. And he rented to us the house in Sedona that we lived in while we built ours.
Okay.
So they owned Navajope Tours.
Okay.
Which was very important bus line around here. It took all of the high school teams everywhere and took traveling groups, and it serviced between Flagstaff and the Grand Canyon. It was the only bus that was going. So he was telling me one time he and Walter and his other friend, Ricky Duncan, hiked down into the canyon on Tom. He said, Walter, Ricky, and Tom. The four of them hiked down into the Grand Canyon, and they just, you know, they're just incredible. incredible scenery, and everything is so huge when you're down in the Grand Canyon.
Hmm.
So they had gone just themselves because they wanted to. So, but they had been let off at the top of the canyon, and then they were supposed to come out at a certain time and get picked up. Well, they came all the way out when it was time for them to come out, and it was late, and it was getting dark when they hiked out, and of course, they weren't being picked up till the next morning.
Oh.
And they were out of food, out of water, starving, and they went to the Alto Bar, and the grill was closed, and they wouldn't give them anything.
Wow.
And so Walter used the phone and called his dad, who runs Navajo Tours, or his mother, and talked to her, and she spoke to the people in the El Tovar, and they set those boys down and gave them a whole, turned on the grill, gave them a whole dinner, gave them a place to sleep, everything.
Huh.
So it's who you know, I guess.
I guess.
But, yeah, but they, he thought it was just wonderful. He said it's both a joy and a struggle, is how he described hiking.
Nice.
In his opinion. Always hard. It was always hard. And I do know that one time he found an old beat-up coffee pot, and old, I mean, old, probably 20 years older than we were. You know, it was just he'd found it someplace down there. And he put it on his backpack and took it home because he knew his mom liked antiques.
Okay.
And this thing was all beat up, you know, it's dented and everything else. We still have it. My mother kept it on the fireplace.
Oh, my.
For all the rest of her life. Because while he was in the bottom of the Grand Canyon, he was actually thinking of her. So.
Nice.
You know, yeah. So, but that was just one of the stories he had to tell me, was the time that they were down by themselves.
Hmm.
So, but yeah, he has some great stories. He has a great sense of humor. It was so fun to talk to him.
Nice.
Such a nice visit last night on your behalf.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you guys visited. So besides the hike partway down with the 4-H Club, did you go hike there again?
No, I didn't. I
okay.
never did. I always wanted to.
Hmm.
But, you know, by the time I was like 18, I was getting married, and I immediately had children, and I was a school teacher, and it just got me busy, you know.
Okay.
It was about 5 years ago when Dave and I took the river trip.
Tell me
and
about
we
that.
We wanted to do it our whole lives, but we've never done it. So, yeah, we have Norm Phillip, who lives across the street from you.
Okay.
He goes often. This was his fourth or fifth trip. And he and Dave were best friends since they were little kids on Navajo Drive. And so he called us up and said, hey, we're going to do this. Would you like to go? And we went, oh, you know, it's real expensive, da, da, da. And he said, you know, you're not getting any younger, and you ought to go at least once in your life. And so we said, okay, we'll go. So we had the best time.
Great.
Pardon?
Great.
Yeah, we did. We enjoyed, you know, even staying at Marble Canyon in the hotel and visiting with everybody and getting to meet the people in the group. And everybody on the boats was so fun. We just had the best time. We had the very first hike, I think, when we went up the Slot Canyon, my husband fell.
Oh.
And he got cut up and dazed, and we didn't know how much he'd hit his head or whatever. But we did have a person who was an internist doctor traveling on the trip. So he came over and took his vitals and all that kind of stuff, and the crew, of course, bandaged him up. But they wanted to send us home, you know, and they were going to call an helicopter and stuff. And he said, nope, just give me a little time to get over the shockiness and I'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole rest of the trip, he was fine.
Good.
So I was so glad that he stood his ground on that, because
yeah.
We would have missed out on a lot of it. That was really our first hike up in the Slot Canyon. I went on ahead because everybody was grouped around him, and they said, Norm said, you go up with my wife up into the canyon, and we'll make sure we take care of him here. So,
mm-hmm.
So I did that. So. But they didn't let him go on any more hikes.
Okay.
They were just afraid he would stumble again or something.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're 70, you know, we were in our 70s, and they didn't want to take a chance with us.
Sure.
So, But they were so great. The other people on the tour were so great. Every time we pulled in for the night, and everything's a sand dune, which you have to struggle up.
Right.
And so, and by the time we would, I would get my husband up to the top of the sand dune, they had already unloaded our tent and put it up.
Wow.
And put up our cots inside and had everything ready. So that was the hardest part, I think, was the overnight camping, you know, for our age.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
You know, because trying to, my husband has had for years, he's had prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, two or three trips to the bathroom during the night.
Ah.
And in the tent, of course, he had to use the little bucket.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't stand all the way up, and you can't really sit down. So it was kind of a crazy overnight for us. But the rest of the people, you know, had no problem in it.
Nice.
I can see that it would be a great thing if you were a little younger. I thought we were a little old and stiff.
Yeah, like Elmer's age when Elmer was doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot different. So, but yeah, and he's, Chuck is right about how everything is so huge. Because we've been to the Grand Canyon to look at it and that kind of stuff up there. I took the fourth graders, two trips, the fourth graders from my school I taught at on a trip up there. And we only went down just under that little tunnel piece.
Yeah, the first tunnel there.
Yeah, uh-huh. And around the corner, and there's fossils in the rocks there.
Right.
So we took everybody down, and we went and looked at the rocks and stuff, and then we came back up. So I'd done that several times.
Where did you teach?
Well, I taught it. Well, I started teaching at Christensen in 1971, and then when they built Knowles, the principal at Knowles hired me to come over and teach there.
Okay.
So it was at Knowles is where we were taking these trips. The fourth graders went every year, and they rode the train, and it was great. It was a great trip for an all-day trip at the Grand Canyon. And most of the kids in the fourth grade had never seen the Grand Canyon.
Okay. Oh, wow.
So I was real familiar, you know, with the terrain from the South Rim, and down in the bottom, I could actually point out a formation or two that I had seen from the South Rim. But we were way down at the bottom looking way up at it. It's a whole different world down there.
Yeah.
I just thought it was awesome. It's one of our highlight trips that we did in our life. So.
Nice. So you would take the fourth graders out there, like, every year? Or?
Yes.
Nice.
Every year they went out. They rode the train up there, and then we spent the whole day, you know, we had a guided tour of some of the places that are on top. And after the condors came, the condors came right over when my granddaughter's class was there. The condors were just 10, 12 feet over our heads.
Nice.
And there were like 20 of them.
Wow.
And the kids were just all enthralled. Here comes number 21. The tags on their wings.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Wow.
That was so exciting for them. And then we did the thing with the rocks, and we had a picnic, and when she was in second grade, actually, Martha Taylor, her husband is Sherm Stevens. I don't know if you know them; they're active around town.
No.
And they Martha always took her second graders to the Grand Canyon.
Okay.
And so we did the Grand Canyon trip then too. So we had. By then I had retired, so I got to go along as a parent chaperone.
Oh, nice.
So I was going in, and when I substituted, I also got to go a couple times when I substituted. But I took my granddaughter's class when she was in second grade, and then I took her class again when they were in fourth grade. And then my grandson's class when they were in fourth grade. So
very nice.
Yeah, so it was lots of trips, and of course we learned a lot of stuff, and I have my grandmother Catherine. I have her picture on a mule going down with the Kolb brothers. So I explained to the kids, you know, how the Kolb brothers took pictures of the Grand Canyon, and again, also took tours down on mules.
And so your grandmother, Catherine, she's the one who, as far as we can figure, on the 10th of October in 1927, she and another woman were the first females to cross the canyon in an airplane.
That's right.
Okay.
She was a very adventurous person.
So when she did that trip down with the Cole brothers, was that the same year, do you think?
I don't know what the year is, and unfortunately it's not marked on the photograph anywhere.
Hmm. Okay.
But I can recognize the two Cole brothers from pictures I've seen of them. So it was them escorting her, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, because typically the Cole brothers were busy, working the photography angle of it. Okay, here's another group of people going down, and we're going to take their picture and develop the film and sell it to them on the way out.
I'm sure that's what they did.
But to actually go down with them,
they were on mules too. So.
Did she write about that? Do you remember anything else she might have talked about it?
She didn't. That I have found. My grandfather had a barn up on the side of Mars Hill. And after he had passed and everything, that property was being sold, and we had to empty the barn, and it had so much stuff, trunks and trunks and trunks of stuff.
Oh, my.
All of her china, all of her silver, all of her papers, all of her home photos and everything. And we just, we just took what we thought we could.
And we
might have missed it.
Sure. No, understood.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So, and I tried contacting. What she did was she would write and then send it to the Galesburg, Illinois newspaper, and they published it. So they published all of them. So I have copies of the newspapers of the same ones that I have written down. But I tried to contact the Galesburg newspaper to find out if they could go, look through archives or whatever to see if there was any more, and I got nowhere with them at all.
Okay.
And my brother said that town is, one of those that's kind of boarded up and going real downhill, so I guess it's not.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the quality it was at one time. So.
Okay, so on your river trip with your husband, it was kind of hard to get up and down the beaches there, but you managed, and it was good. And did you go all the way through the canyon, or did you get on a helicopter at the end? Do you remember how that worked out?
We got on a helicopter and flew out to a ranch.
To
Diamond?
The Bar 10.
Bar 10, yeah. We flew out to the Bar 10.
Okay.
So, and I'd never been in a helicopter either. So
And
I got to sit there next to the pilot.
Okay.
Co-pilot seat. That was cool. So, yeah, it was just, it really, everybody that ever mentions it to me, I tell them, go now while you're young.
Well, that's fun.
My extent of the Grand Canyon itself, other than, every time we had anybody tourist-wise, friends, relatives from other parts of the country, we always took them to the Grand Canyon.
Okay.
And of course we knew a lot of the history and stuff, and would take them, into the El Tovar, and with the kids, we went into the El Tovar, and a ranger met us there and gave us a whole talk, and then we went into the over by the cold place, and another ranger would talk to them, and another one stood out on the deck area where you can look out where the condors came.
Mm-hmm.
Give them a talk there. It's always just been a part of our life,
Nice.
However, my granddaughter, who now lives in Washington, her CEO is visiting and staying at our Sedona house, and they asked her some questions about the Grand Canyon before they left, because they wanted to go there. And she was going, oh my gosh, she said, I am absolutely the worst Arizonian. I've not been there since the fourth grade.
Oh gosh.
I don't know. So, but they did. They drove up there and saw it a couple days before the storm, so that was nice.
Nice. Your last name is Turner.
Yeah.
How did you meet your second husband?
We went to high school together.
Okay.
And so we'd known each other for, you know, several years. But right after high school, I got married and had two kids, and he went to do two tours in Vietnam.
Oh, okay.
In the Navy. And my marriage ended. Obviously, we were way too young.
Mm.
It ended, and then my husband, his family, I was living on Havasupai, and his family were living in the house, have always lived in the house, that was right at the corner of Havasupai and Navajo.
Okay.
Split level. And so anyway, he came home to his home, to his parents' house, and I was on Havasupai, and so we got to see each other and talk to each other and stuff. And then it turned out that I ended up going back to college to finish my teaching degree, and we had a class together.
Oh, wow.
So then we just said, oh, well, how about going for a cloak after class?
And what was his first name?
David.
There's a, the train station at the South Rim on the Grand Canyon was operated by a man named Sam Turner. And he worked for the Santa Fe. He had a son named Samuel. I just wonder if they're related to David. Turner's a fairly common name, but...
Yes. His father's name was David.
Okay.
And his nephew was named David. Every 30 years there was a play, Turner, David Turner, every 30 years playing football for Flagstaff High School.
Okay. Confusing.
His dad was in the 30s, and Dave was in the 60s, and our nephew was in the 90s. But they didn't have anybody. My father-in-law grew up here and went to high school and everything here, but he wasn't related to anybody else around here.
Okay. So in theory, he would have known your dad, your father, your father-in-law?
Together. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And CB, your father's father?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. And then what did David do as a career?
Your My husband?
Yeah.
He's also a school teacher and football coach.
Oh, okay.
So he coached at Coconino High School for, well, between the, when they used to have freshmen in the high school. Then they moved him to the junior high for a while. But he started 35 years he coached.
So he would have known Kim and Craig Holland.
Oh, yeah. He and Craig Holland are good friends.
Yeah.
And Kim and I knew each other because of teaching.
Okay, sure. She taught English, that's
and
right.
Actually, I taught their daughter in kindergarten.
Okay. It's a small world.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, because I was wondering if David had taken his classes up to the canyon as well.
No, he didn't.
Okay.
He taught elementary school at Killip.
Okay.
Elementary. And so then it was a whole different dynamic than Noel's.
When did you...
Financially and everything.
When did you go to high school in Sedona? How did that work out?
Oh, no, I rode the school bus to Flagstaff every day.
Okay, so up Highway 89, up the switchbacks?
Yes.
Okay. What was that like?
Well, we got picked up right, well, in front of Oak Creek Market, which is right downtown in Sedona. We got picked up there, so we walked down there every day, and then we got on the bus about 6:30, and we had to stop at every place in the canyon where kids lived.
Wow.
So we stopped at... Indian Gardens, and we stopped at, well, it's Mission Rancho. The Lemieux kids lived there. It's got a different name now, I think. And Todd's Lodge, and Junipine, Forest Houses. There was all the way up. And at that time, at the West Fork, the Wolschlegel family was living in the home down there that's nothing but a ruin now. And so they would get on, too. And
how'd you spell?
We'd all go up there.
How do you spell their last name?
It's Wolfschlegel, so I think it's W-O-L-F-S-C-H Schlegel. Close.
Okay. Wolf Schlegel.
They lived
right
down at Mayhew's Lodge.
Okay.
We're running Mayhew's Lodge. And so the kids, those kids rode our bus too. So we had all these kids. And then we'd get on up to to the high school and they'd let us out. And then they'd be waiting out there at the end of the day and we'd have to ride it all the way home.
Would you pick up any kids between the top of the switchbacks and, say, Fort Tuthill or all the way into town?
Right at the top of the switchbacks, there's a highway camp.
Okay.
People used to live at that highway camp.
Hmm.
We did pick up kids there.
Okay.
And I still know a couple of those kids because they were cute little kindergarten and first graders, and I was a born teacher. So I would sit down and look at their homework or read them a story or something on the bus while we were driving that.
Cool.
I got on top and picked them up. And they still remember it when I run into them. They say, oh, she was so great to me on the school bus. She always read me stories. And, you know.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
So, and you went to Flag High?
Uh-huh.
There would have been a deputy superintendent there, maybe named Jim Sanders?
Oh, yes. I knew Mr. Sanders.
What can you tell me about Mr. Sanders?
We just thought he was he was administration.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody had him for a class that I can remember. But he was like a disciplinarian, you know. All he had to do was walk by and people would straighten up whatever they were doing. Nobody really got to know him.
Okay.
To know what kind of a person he is or anything, but everybody knew that if you got in trouble, and I'm sure that some of the reputation came from kids that maybe had been in trouble in the office.
Oh.
But I was not one of those.
Mm-hmm.
I only got in trouble once in high school, and it was Mr. Killip that took care of that one.
Oh my, what did you do, if you dare to tell?
Well, it was, you know, like my senior year, and the weather was great, and a carload of kids wanted to go to Oak Creek and ditch school.
Uh-huh.
And so I rode the bus up to Flagstaff, and then I got off and got into their car, and we went back to Sedona. And I had to get on the floor of the car on the way through town because my dad's office was right on the main track. And so and then we went down and spent the day down by the creek. And then we all had to get in the car and dash back up there to get me there in time to catch the bus and go back down again. So, but when we came up, there had been something in the canyon that held us up, and we were a little bit late. And I was going, oh, my gosh, the bus is going to be gone. So I expected to meet it, you know. And we were trying to figure out how we would get the bus to stop and let me get on it while it was on its way to the rim.
Right.
But we didn't find it, didn't see it. We got to school, and I said, oh, thank God, there must be something wrong with the bus. It's still here. And I went running over and got on the bus, and Mr. Killip was saying, well, Janny, we've been holding the bus for you, and I expect to see you in my office at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Oh, my.
And I was just, oh, my gosh, I was so scared. And, of course, they were good friends with my parents, the Killips were.
Hmm.
So my parents never said a word to me. Until the night of graduation, my dad said, now you won't have to worry about catching the bus after being on the floorboards of the car.
Oh.
And I was, oh, okay.
the all-seeing.
I went to Flag High, too.
Oh, my. That's wonderful.
Thing, but boy, for us Sedona kids to ditch and go to Oak Creek, it was hard because our parents sometimes were downtown when we got on the bus in the morning.
Right.
If we hadn't been on the bus, they would have known.
And so, and they might, you know, drive by Slide Rock and look down there and go, well, there's my kid down there.
We were further down the creek from Sedona.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The other way, so, but.
Hmm.
Yeah, but we had to go through Sedona, both going and coming back up, so I had to be down on the floor.
Oh, my.
My dad had a big picture window right at, looking out at the street of his office.
Watch the cars go by.
Yeah. Hmm.
See who's in them.
Yep. So,
oh, my.
but I thought I was so sneaky, but I wasn't.
Did that road ever get kind of treacherous during snowstorms or rainstorms?
Very treacherous. I do remember one time, there's one curve that's like 180 degrees where it swings way out and goes back the same beside itself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we were coming up that curve, and there was a Cadillac in front of us, and it went sideways. It slid sideways, and so the bus had to stop. So the bus driver had to stop the bus, and we were sliding, and one tire was completely off the pavement.
Oh, my.
There was no guardrail there. It was just off the pavement. And, of course, it was a drop-off. But the bus stopped with just the one tire off. And the bus driver had the boys get off the bus. The girls all had to sit on the left-hand side of the bus so that it was a right tire off. The girls all sat on the right side of the bus. The boys got off and pushed that bus wheel back onto the pavement.
Wow.
And then they got back in and we continued on our way to school. That would never be allowed today. I don't know. It would cause a huge rescue thing in the canyon and everything.
Yeah, sure.
But it was just, that's all it would have taken was to get that one tire back on the bus. We had enough boys on the bus that all thought they were big, tough, strong guys, you
mm-hmm,
know. So
mm-hmm.
They just got on and
pushed it over.
They stood kind of, you know, down off of the highway because it was a drop-off.
Right.
So they were kind of on rough terrain.
On the edge of the cliff there.
Yeah, and it was snow and ice.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, but it slid right back onto the road, so we were okay. It was different driving that every, because it was early, you know, we got on the bus at 6:30, so, and had to be at school before 8, so it was kind of a risky thing a few times.
Yeah, and school would end what time in the afternoon?
About 3:30.
Okay.
I think. So, yeah.
So that was 6:30 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Oh, yeah.
For you guys that had to...
For us to get home.
Yeah.
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 And then I told you yesterday that when I got home, I had to go up to our ranch area and walk, get my horse exercised and cleaned and fed and watered down for the night and then walk back to my house.
Yeah.
So it was kind of...
And then you had to do your homework and after dinner.
Yeah. But we didn't have anything else really going on after dinner.
That's true.
We had a small black and white TV by the time I was in high school.
Mm.
But that was just for my dad's football games.
Okay.
As far as I remember. Well, there were times when I was younger, I think, that I do remember we watched Roy Rogers and we watched the American Bandstand when I was a teenager. So there were a few things we did get once in a while. But we didn't just sit in front of the TV in the evenings. We're in our rooms doing our homework.
Mm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we didn't have any time in the morning to do it.
Right, to be up.
We were up.
Breakfast and
5:30, quarter of 6, and out
goes the bus. Yeah, you bet. You bet. Hmm. And then, I'm assuming that the bus schedule, I think you mentioned, limited your ability to participate in after school activities.
That's right. That's right, because we had to catch that bus home. And, of course, everything, like the football team, the basketball team, all those things, were after school. And those kids would all go straight, you know, from their last class into the gym to get ready for their practice and stuff.
Right.
And so the Sedona kids were very rarely, unless you were over 16 and your parents let you drive, which was rare.
Huh.
You know, I remember one boy that was on the basketball team. And my brother, who was Mr. Perfect, was allowed to drive when he was in high school. I was not. But
wait, I mean, you only ditched class once.
Oh, yeah.
And you couldn't drive? Hmm.
No, they didn't let me drive.
Was that...
But he was 4 or 5 years younger than me. I graduated in 64, and he graduated in 67, I think.
Okay.
So, but he was 3 years behind. But he was You know, he was just a brain and responsible, really good kid. And so my dad let him have. He had an old Scout. You know what a Scout is?
Yeah, the little four-wheel drive kind of boxy sort of truck thing.
Yeah, kind of jeepy.
Yeah, jeepy thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and he had that, and he and my dad would use it for various things. They'd come up sometimes in it together when my dad had to go to rotary or something, but otherwise, Chuck was allowed to drive back and forth to school.
Do you think that, I don't know how to put this carefully, your father would have been a man of his times, and the concept of woman empowerment, he had to be aware of that. He had to have either a strong mom who said, well, she's going to learn to drive regardless, or, well, she's going to wear pants. She's not going to come home having to swing on the monkey bars wearing a skirt. I'm going to put her in pants or whatever. Do you think that your father was just basically, it wasn't that you couldn't drive, it wasn't that you weren't responsible and able to do it?
No, I think, of course, my father wasn't used to fathering a girl. You know, and Chuck was, of course, a boy, and he knew about boys, you
okay.
know.
Okay, yeah.
But so that was partly it. But my mom just was not the same kind of person as I am.
Okay.
You know.
How so?
She was more extremely self-controlled, and would always tell me, I just don't understand you. You're just like your father.
Well, didn't that explain it?
Things that I wanted to do are things that never occurred to her to do.
Oh, wow.
You know, she was very straight-laced. She was raised in Arkansas, and they were Southern Baptist.
Okay.
She was not allowed to dance. She was not allowed to go for walks with boys. You know, any of this kind of stuff. And I was doing those things, you know, and it was real hard for her to accept that it was all right for me to do it. She wasn't still strict Southern Baptist in her head, you know. It was just something that she'd been so conditioned to that it was hard for her to accept those things.
It was a different
going to the,
a different generation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was the 50s, you know. And we were all doing American Bandstand, and you know, we had that room on the house.
Right.
Dad fixed up so that we could dance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mom had a hard time. But as long as they were there to supervise my dancing,
right.
I guess,
right.
It wasn't such a problem. But I do know that sometimes they were dancing, you know, it'd be somebody else's turn to have the group at their house, and Mom didn't let me go.
Hmm. Okay.
So I think she just really wanted to keep me under control.
Hmm.
She was afraid I would do something stupid.
Well, this was in the
too young and have children.
Yeah, in the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, that was a fascinating time in the country.
Yes.
And your mom, who was a teenager in the 1930s, would have really seen that differently.
Yeah. She had a harder time with it than my dad. My dad had a lot more freedom because living in Flagstaff all those years and with the Depression, he played sports in high school. He was very popular, homecoming king, all that kind of stuff. And of course, like I said, you know, that they kept the family in meat just by walking up the side of Mars Hill and finding a deer,
right.
Bringing it home. You know?
Right.
So he had a lot more freedom, and he flew in that plane.
Right.
You know, and my brother said that actually my dad and his brother bought their own little plane. And Francis Decker had taught them how to fly it, and they did their own flying of that plane. So I didn't realize that. He said it was a little one, like a Piper Cub, something that was recognizable. But, you know, they were allowed to go out as high schoolers and go fly a plane.
Yeah, well,
he had much more freedom than she ever had.
This is, I think, of Catherine, your father's mother.
Yeah,
very different woman than your mother.
Oh, yeah.
And probably your mother's mother.
Yes. And Catherine's mother was a doctor.
Wow.
She was a medical doctor, and she was the only woman doctor in the area where she was training and everything else. And, of course, not well-received by all the men.
Right.
But she ended up being a practicing doctor. And
good
she
for
was
her.
Working at a sanitarium when she met her husband, who lived across the street on his Kentucky plantation.
Huh.
So they come, they're a long line of women that were strong and not necessarily following the mold.
Right.
And so my dad was a bit more understanding about that stuff than my mom, who just couldn't, you know, she had been raised on that cotton farm, picking cotton from the age 2 to 18, and then escaping to nursing college and into the Navy to be a nurse on Guadalcanal. So she just had never, she'd always been self-controlled. She was going to get out of that cotton field, by golly.
Right, right.
So she was strong in her own way, but not as adventurous.
Well, that's really, that puts it in a whole new light when she told you, you know, I don't understand you, because what she didn't understand was your mom, your father's mom.
Yes.
And her mom, that generation of empowered women.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, because my great-grandmother was a doctor. She was born in 1840.
Hmm.
And she went to medical college in New York City, attending the Bellevue clinics.
Wow.
To me, Bellevue was always considered like with mental patients.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and Catherine wrote in her little handwritten biography, in those days, women in medicine were a novelty, and men sneered and jeered at her presence in the classes and the clinics. That's what her mother had said. She said, in our presence.
Yeah, and just being female and getting into med school was tough, because the admitting people would say, well, you're just going to get married and you're not going to have a career in medicine.
That's right. And she did.
Yeah, good for her.
So she was working at a sanitarium and met her husband across the street. The Kentucky to Colonel type, she said.
Huh.
Which, yeah, so that was, you know, I think, and the growing up in Flagstaff would be an entirely different atmosphere, as, you know, small cotton fields. There's her family, there were hundreds of them, and they all still lived there.
Wow.
And we went, at one point, we went into the town, and I've been on Ancestry, of course, and been contacted with a few of them, and I have all of her high school yearbook and diary and all this kind of stuff.
So wow.
Her way of life was totally...
Yes, the Southern Baptist. I mean, it's very different, I think, than the Flagstaff lifestyle, I suppose.
Yeah, and, you know, they were raised to spend their time picking cotton. They didn't have free time to go do anything.
Right.
And it would have been frowned on anyway. But it's a good way to control them, to get them in the field, because there's nothing to do anyway. You can't go dancing. You can't do
right. I suppose so. Yeah. Huh. What ground have we not covered that we should?
That we've not covered everything. We didn't talk much about Flagstaff in my era, but Flagstaff isn't part of the Grand Canyon thing.
Well, we didn't, and let's do that. Let's just spend a little time on that.
Okay.
So you moved to Flagstaff when you were in high school. This would have been in the late 1960s or mid-1960s?
Yeah, I graduated from high school here. But while I was in high school, I stayed at my grandfather's house to go to all the dances and all the activities and the football games. And so So I was allowed to stay at my grandpa's house and go see those things. I wasn't allowed to stay, like, to go to practice every day for a week to be a cheerleader or anything.
Okay.
But I was allowed to come Friday nights and Saturdays. We had most of our high school games were on Saturdays at the old NAU stadium.
Okay.
And so, and then we had dances in the school gym. And so I was allowed to stay at my grandpa's house, which was on Mars Hill and Wilson Drive. And I could attend all of those things. So, you know, I was in Flagstaff attending stuff and going places, the movie theater and those kinds of things in Flagstaff then. And then I graduated in 64.
Right.
And I went for a year and a half to ASU. And then I got married at semester break in January and moved to Flagstaff. And had two kids within just a couple of years. They're 18 months apart.
Okay.
So, and of course, I married a Babbitt, so I had other things that were expected of me.
Mm.
Like, you know, my mother-in-law's parties that she would throw, and I was expected to pass the orders and say the right thing and meet the right people.
You
know, a whole different thing than just being, I wasn't just free to run. But after my marriage failed, I lived on Havasupai, and I went back to college, and I had to walk from Havasupai to NAU to take my classes.
Wow.
And at one time, my husband had a motorcycle, just a Yamaha kind of a motorcycle, not a Harley or anything.
Okay.
And he was out on the ranches with his dad, and it was leaned up against the side of the house, and I taught myself to ride that motorcycle, and I was using it to get back and forth to the college.
Nice.
Nobody, he believes women were needed to be pregnant and barefoot in the kitchen. He didn't even know I was going to college. So, but.
And was this when you were getting your teaching certificate?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And my dad passed away in 66, and my first child was born in 66.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the two kids, and I wanted to get my education, but I didn't have any money. Babbitt, you know, would have kept me on a tight rein.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I was married with two kids. I couldn't go do anything anyway.
Right.
So, my dad, in his will, had left his military insurance to my brother and I was allowed to, as long as I was enrolled in school, my school was paid for.
Nice.
So that got me through to get my teaching degree.
And nice.
I got that in 71. So.
What was Flagstaff like in the late 1960s? I think of the underpass under the train tracks. That would have been there. The over the tracks on Beaver would have been there. Was Beaver still two-way?
Oh, yeah. All of them were two-way.
Okay. San Francisco wasn't one-way north, and Beaver wasn't one-way south.
Right. They were both ways.
Okay.
So there weren't any one-way streets downtown, and including Aspen and Birch and the sideways ones. So,
right.
But... yeah, but we spent, even in high school, we had a full hour for lunch, and
okay.
We'd leave campus.
Hmm.
And so we went downtown. We'd go down to Noel's Bakery and have something for lunch, or we'd, you know, we'd just kind of mess around walking and talking or going, you know, sometimes we'd go to somebody's house, but most of the time we went downtown, and we had time to walk downtown and get a donut and a Coke at Noel's Bakery and head back to school.
Would you ever go to the Grand Canyon Cafe?
No. We didn't have time for like a sit-down
okay.
Get waited on thing.
I mean, I was thinking about Janet Wong, W-O-N-G,
uh-huh.
And her husband, which I think was Jimmy, but I'm not sure of that. was his name?
My dad's best friends was one of the Wongs.
Okay.
And so yeah, they've been here forever.
Yeah.
You know, they were. I have photographs of my dad's yearbook of the two of them standing and talking on the football field and that.
Nice.
Kind of stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. So.
And the lumber mill was still operating then?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Uh-huh. And the trains?
We really didn't cross the tracks and go that far.
Okay.
Because we still had to get back, and it's uphill.
Right, yep.
And we were all walking because we were, you know, nobody really had cars then.
Oh, right.
A few cars, but they were the ones that...
It might take you, what, 15, 20 minutes to walk somewhere, and then you have to get something to eat quick, and then turn around 15, 20 minutes to walk back. Huh, okay.
And the school was different than it is now. They've added things that weren't there when we were there.
Okay.
So, but it was basically the same, but they've done a lot of, all of the south-facing stuff where the offices are,
mm-hmm.
That wasn't there.
Okay.
That wasn't there. But the swimming pool was, of course, there. And the, we had swimming and PE. Well, we had to when we were in school, and we'd swim in the swimming pool.
Okay.
Now I'm watching the Flagstaff Eagle girls jumping in the pool after they win their basketball games.
Nice. Yep.
Same pool. and of course, my husband was on the football team when we were there, and all the jocks would stand in the hallway and. Sexually harass verbally the girls as they walked by. You know?
Oh, interesting.
But not a thing in those days.
Huh.
I can remember everybody dreading walking down Third Hall because all of the big football player guys would be standing there going, "Hey, baby, you want some fries for that shake?"
Hmm.
Oh, my gosh. They were just harassing us terribly, so we hated going down there.
Interesting.
But Coach Clive was a wonderful man, was our football coach. And if he heard about it, he'd line those boys up and put their head against the lockers and whap them with a knuckle in the forehead. Their head.
What was his name again?
Like that was Coach John Ply. He was really the nicest man in the world.
How do you spell his last name?
P-L-Y.
P-L-Y. Thank you.
You can ask Saunders. He'll know.
Okay.
He was great. So, and we just lost him a few years ago. And he was good friends with my husband all those years, and our grandsons started kindergarten together and went all the way through, graduated high school, and they were roommates in Phoenix in their early 20s together. So,
with
he was the coach, and my husband was the player, and then our grandsons ran around together.
Oh, nice.
They still run around together.
Nice.
They were together last night.
When I think of Flagstaff today, I was just out for a walk this morning. The cars trying to go up to the ski slopes at the Snow Bowl are bumper to bumper as they slowly work their way onto 180 to slowly head their way out of town. When did you first notice a little more traffic congestion? When did that first get on your radar screen?
About in the 80s.
Okay.
Up until then, I mean, there was always some traffic, but it wasn't enough. I mean, you could cross town in 3 minutes.
Right.
It was just, you just didn't see anybody, and there weren't as many lights or roundabouts, non-existent, of course. And we could go even from here, where I'm in Upper Greenlaw, and I could be downtown in 3 or 4 minutes.
Hmm.
You didn't have any other traffic on the road.
Right.
And they were stop signs. They're still stop signs. When you come from the hospital down to Beaver, that was a stop sign. And every street down there, they're stop signs. We didn't have to wait.
No lights.
If no one was there, we just went.
Uh-huh.
So, but it really got a lot easier, I think, in the 80s. And my kids were in high school in the 80s. More of the high school kids started having cars then.
Right. It's really interesting having come to this town so much later than than when you did, the traffic really didn't seem to be a problem on our mental radar screen until maybe 15 or 20 years ago. And for you, this, you know, it became a problem because you had seen that change in the 1980s. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, because I can remember things, and I used to take the second graders down to town and do a historical tour with them.
Okay.
And I was able to tell them, we'd stop at the post office downtown, the one that's got all the copper on the front.
Right.
And I would tell them, when I was a kid, we would walk in and talk to the postmaster.
Oh, my.
And he knew us all by name.
Wow.
And I sometimes would go in, and he'd say, in the summer, with my mom or dad, and I'd go in there, and he'd say, oh, it must be someone's birthday. I have a letter here from a grandma in California. And I'd say, oh, grandma, you know.
Oh, my.
It'd be a birthday card or something, and the second graders just loved that. And I played. My grandfather's office was across the street from the courthouse, and he and my dad and my uncle would be over there working sometimes and had us with them. And we played on the stairs, up and down the banister, everything. And that part of the courthouse is closed off. You can't even get up in there, really.
Huh.
But there's a bell up there, you know, that used to ring.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a great place to play for a kid.
I bet.
So, but, yeah, none of that, you know, was, boy, by the 80s, that was just none of that was going on.
Hmm. What do you think about Flagstaff now with the student housing? They call them hubs, the multi-story student housing. And
ridiculous. Hmm. I think most of us old-timey people think that this used to be a college town, and we would support them. We went to all the football games and the basketball games. The stands were always full. We supported the school and everything. But if they needed a new building, it was up to the school to build it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the city's responsibility or concern, you know, because we had our town and they had their campus. And
mm-hmm.
It was separate. And then when they started doing all of this, the hub, I guess, is the first one that was right there behind Granny's Closet.
Yeah.
That just took everybody's breath away. I mean, the scope of it was so huge. And, you know, NAU thinks they need that much housing, then they have land, they have money, they should be building it.
Hmm.
You know, and then, of course, it's so expensive. And you think, well, and they said, well, we're only going to rent to, they told us, you're only going to rent to people that don't have a car.
Right, right.
Parking. And then all of the students, of course, had cars. If you can afford $1,500 a month for an apartment, you can drive a car.
Hmm.
And then they started parking in people's yards. And of course, so many of the old local families' homes were destroyed.
Right.
That. And that really upset everybody, because these were families that had lived on that land for three or four generations. We all knew them.
Yeah.
And they were being, you know, almost kicked out of their homes. You know, their pittance that they were given for some of those homes. But
mm-hmm.
But they were torn down, and they just went on building and building and building. And thought, my goodness. And we used to have a law that nothing could be bigger than could be taller than the courthouse or some such thing. So there weren't any. We had an ordinance that you couldn't build buildings more
right.
than a certain height. And there was, all of a sudden, here was seven stories. And everyone was so shocked at that, because that, you know, coming into Flagstaff now, it used to be people would look at the mountain.
Right.
And now they can't really see it until they get to certain places when they come in. They can see it out from the overpass by the airport,
mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
know.
Right,
but
right.
when they come into the town, all they see is buildings.
Well, I was thinking of the
I don't know.
The federal building that was built just south of the courthouse. That was
this recently one?
No, this was this would have been, gosh, in the 70s maybe they built that building? When did they build that? But it was the tallest building in Flagstaff for quite a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the tallest building we had was Penny's.
Okay.
Which had that parking on the top.
Oh, and interesting. Which is the Old Town Shops?
Old Town Shops.
Yeah, okay.
And Penny's was there, and the parking was on the roof.
Right.
And they had that little roundabout driveway thing that went up there, and mm-hmm. that was like the tallest building in Flagstaff for a long time. People sat up there to watch the powwow parade.
Oh, wow. And then the building I was thinking of would be a block or a block and a half east on that same side of the street, just across and east of Catty Corner to the courthouse.
I know what you mean. Yes, that was a big one, right behind the Masonic building.
Yeah.
The Masonic building was the tallest thing for a long time, too. It was three stories.
Right.
But they used that for everything. You know, that was a central place. The upstairs had a ballroom, and all the local people would go up there to have dances and celebrate the 4th of July and all that kind of stuff. Because my family were all Masons.
Okay.
Back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
My dad would tell me, you know, they would have like a 4th of July celebration, and it would start raining, and they'd all go to the Masonic Lodge, and go upstairs to the ballroom, and the band would play, and they would dance and do stuff.
Huh.
So, that was, but those three stories was typically about as tall as anything was. And it's just, I don't know, I feel like they're trying to make us into a city. And Flagstaff was a town. It was Flagtown.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's population too. It's funny because, you know, I want to be careful. When I came to this town in 1991, you know, it seemed like a nice place. And today, I have to be very careful to try to look through those same 1991 eyes. That the people that are just showing up in 2022 are wearing. You know, those same fresh eyes going, wow, what a nice town. And what they don't see is the changes that you've seen through your lifetime that have really filled it up.
It hurts our hearts sometimes.
Mm.
We really are staying out in East Flag way more than we used to.
Mm.
I have not been downtown in probably 2 years. Actually, the last time I was in downtown, I think, was at Christmas time, when my granddaughter was singing in the children's chorale at Heritage Square.
Huh.
And she's 27. So it's been a few years since I've actually gone downtown.
Yeah.
And of course, I married a Babbitt. I spent a lot of time down in Babbitt's.
Hmm.
In the old building that they tore down.
Okay.
To make Heritage Square.
Right.
As well as in the offices and stuff. My nephew Billy still has an office upstairs in Babbitt's.
Okay.
Because he runs the ranches.
This is Billy Cordasco.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my nephew.
Okay.
And his mother and my first husband were brother and sister.
Okay.
And so, and my son's name is John Babbitt III.
Okay.
So, we have a lot of connections there, even though our marriage didn't work. The kids still were raised as Babbitts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we're still connected with that, and the changes have just been really hard to take for a lot of us, you know. Oh, my goodness. It didn't used to be like this. We didn't used to have parking meters. We didn't have to go around, right? We didn't have to, you know. Finding a parking place downtown is just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting, and Jim Babbitt just passed away recently.
Yes.
But he was very vocal about
my son's godfather.
Okay.
Yeah, loved Jimmy. He was in school when we were in school. So he was a really great person, and he spoke for the trees. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he spoke for the rest of us when he wrote letters to the editor and stuff. Everybody we know in Flagstaff would go, yes, all right, Jimmy, way to go.
Nice.
You know, but we lost somebody very important that knew so much history and cared about everything so much.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Yeah, he was very nice. We would talk on the street, and I mentioned I was interested in some photographs of Glen Canyon Dam, and he said, "Oh, I've got some photos. I'll get them to you." And years would go by, and I kept asking him. One point, he called me up and he said, "Tom, I've got these photographs. They're going to be on the front porch. Come get them in 30 minutes." And I drove over. There they were, and they were great pictures. I was really grateful. It was just, yeah, very, very wonderful man. Definitely interested in the history of the town, very aware of what was, what was happening. So,
yeah, I was in the post office one day and I saw the downtown post office, which has been a long time ago, but I saw a postcard in the glass case. It was just a display thing by the photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a postcard that had a picture of my granddad's office with his name painted in the window.
Oh, wow.
And we didn't have anything like that.
Hmm.
And so I called Jim and asked him about the photographer, and he contacted the photographer, and they sent me a copy of the picture.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's great.
Yeah. Very nice. Well, it is interesting that, you know, the population of the planet just goes up and up and up. And people want to live somewhere, and it seems like a nice town, as you say.
Yep.
And new people coming in today say, gee, this seems like a nice town.
Yeah, it's, you know, and it's always been home. You know, everybody says, why don't you just move down to Sedona? You've got a house down there. It's free, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But this is home, you know. I lived in Sedona from the time I was 8 to 18.
Hmm.
And I've been in this house alone since 71.
Wow, yeah, another lifetime.
So, yeah, it's just not the same. And this is home.
Yeah.
Raised two generations of kids here, took them to all their events, you know, froze to death at all the Little League fields. You know, this is home.
Yeah.
So, but it's sure different. All of the areas that used to be just wide open spaces are just crowded with buildings and people and
right.
Traffic lights, roundabouts.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a very different place. But it's fascinating talking to my friends who are, you know, people, we have friends living in Moab and you know, they're like, we've got to get out of here because the place is overrun.
Yeah.
And of course, then when you move, you know, you move to another place that's kind of quiet, and, you know, then you're another person, another family that's moved in, and then another family comes in, and, you know, so all the quiet little towns are becoming cities.
And we keep thinking, where are they all working?
Mm.
Where are we going to get the water?
Right. This then starts begging the resource questions.
Frightening.
Yeah.
Yeah. The water situation has always been bad. One of those old newspapers that I have from the 1920s, they were worried about the water then.
Yep.
And here we're still worrying about the water.
That's right.
And you have all those all those apartments, the hubs and all of those things, full of college kids who have never heard of a three-minute shower.
Mm.
You know, they have no vested interest in being safe with our water, so who knows how much water is being used in all of those apartment buildings.
Well, there's a meeting, I think, just today about the Red Gap Ranch.
Right.
Where Flagstaff is supposed to get its water in the future, and there's a company that wants to do some fracking out there for helium or something like that.
Right.
And what's that going to do to the quality of the water? So, you know, these questions are really important.
Right. And all the uranium mining, I saw that they're going to let them do some paper.
Yes, that's right.
About they're going to let them do uranium mining again.
Mm-hmm.
And uranium mining directly affects so much of the water supply for the Indian reservation.
You bet.
And they have this huge problem with cancer.
Yes.
You know.
Yep.
I've had breast cancer twice.
Oh, my.
And the last time I had to do chemo, you know, for months and months.
Okay.
And there were many times, there's like 45 chairs in that chemo room, and there were sometimes I was the only non-Navajo person in there.
Oh, my.
I mean, it's a huge problem for
these
people.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the downwinders. I'm a downwinder.
Okay.
I'm sure that most of them are, too, but there are a lot that are just, that are young enough that they aren't downwinders so much as they are being exposed to the residual.
That's right.
Radiation and uranium mining and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
It's just, we're just destroying the resources that we need to live well here. So
that's and that it takes a while to figure that out. It takes a while, I think, to have the understanding of how things work to go, oh, wait a minute, this isn't right. It shouldn't be this way.
Correct. And the Fort Tuthill snow area?
Yes.
They're using regular water. That's not reclaimed water.
Oh, really? Huh.
They have a deal with the city to use city water.
Hmm.
And I'm going, what? I can see the reclaimed water out there. It's not even on the mountain where the Indians would be for pests.
Mm-hmm.
But fresh water, that just seems to me an unbelievable waste.
Yeah, no, these are
filling somebody's pocket, but not ours.
Well, those are fascinating questions about scarce resources.
Yeah, that's a big fear of ours, because it was a utopia of wide open spaces and water. And one of the things I saw in the newspaper was, in one of my grandmother's papers, and she said they went out to Lake Mary, which is a beautiful lake,
mm-hmm.
way out of town.
Not anymore. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a whole different problem. That's kind of one of the things that really bothers me, is when we do start running short of water. You know, maybe they can do the Red Gap Ranch, but it's not really like a done deal. We're not working on pipelines or anything.
And there was much discussion with the Arizona Department of Transportation saying, okay, well, if you want to run a water pipeline up along the highway to get the Flagstaff with that water, you're going to have to do a lot of remediation work. If that pipeline breaks, we don't want you to flood out the highway. So all of a sudden that puts a whole other engineering marvel into the equation. And so there's all kinds of these things you look at and go, hmm.
Yeah, between here and there, there's an awful lot of natural gas pipelines that have to be crossed.
Right.
So
deal with that.
My grandson worked with the Transwestern Pipeline for a while, and I became more aware of all the underground pipelines that are crisscrossing all over the country up here.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. Very fascinating. And of course, you know, the longer we live, the greater perspective we get, the rear view mirror of our lives gets bigger.
Right.
To see these changes.
Yeah.
It makes us wonder.
And to be concerned about them, you know.
Yeah.
The young people seem to think that they're being all concerned about taking care of the earth and having it be clean and get rid of the plastic straws and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they're the ones that are just standing in that hot shower every morning.
Mm. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The fact that all that water is running down the drain doesn't bother them at all. It's like, wait, we need to catch that drain.
Well, yeah, this is where the whole concept of the permeable barriers comes in, where we're going to be drinking our wastewater, just going to clarify it, treat it, and drink it again.
That's right.
So it's a technology. It's a very fascinating journey.
Hmm.
Yeah. Jenny, what have I forgotten to ask you?
I think that's pretty well covering it.
Well, this has been a lovely series. I'm very grateful for your taking the time to visit with me and tell me about Flagstaff and Sedona and your life therein. That's just been a lovely discussion, and I'm very, very thankful that you've done this.
Oh, well, I appreciate it, and I'm anxious to read some of the other people I know's
fun
stuff in your
That's very fun. Well, with that, then, this will conclude the Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Janie Turner. Today is Friday. It's February 25th, 2022. My name is Tom Martin, and Janie, thank you so very much.
Thank you.